against genocide, for God's sake. And all our president would have to do is call up the Israeli leaders and say, look, enough. You don't get any more arms. You don't get any more political support. We're even going to help UNRWA supply food and medicine and water unless you stop. That's all it would take. So rules-based international order, give me a break. That's a fraud. That's a fraud, as Larry mentioned. But the UN is coming into its own now. And the U.S. is totally isolated with its vassal, the U.K. It's going to be interesting tomorrow what happens at the Security Council.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on the spotlight. Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst out of Florida. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst out of North Carolina. Thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 146 to 148 of chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa ka'ayyim min nabiyyin qatala ma'ahu ribbiyyun kathir. فَمَا وَهَنُوا لِمَا أَصَابَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَمَا ضَعُفُوا وَمَا اسْتَكَانُوا وَاللَّهُ يُحِبُّ الصَّابِرِينَ وَمَا كَانَ قَوْلَهُمْ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا ذُنُوبَنَا وَإِسْرَافَنَا فِي أَمْرِنَا رَبَّنَا اغْفِرْ لَنَا ذُنُوبَنَا وَإِسْرَافَنَا فِي أَمْرِنَا وَثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَنَا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين. فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين. فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. And how many a prophet has fought with whom were many worshippers of the Lord? So they did not become weak-hearted on account of what befell them in Allah's way, nor did they weaken, nor did they abase themselves. And Allah loves the patient. And their saying was no other than that they said, "Our Lord, forgive us our faults and our extravagance in our affair, and make firm our feet and help us against the unbelieving people." So Allah gave them the reward of this world and better reward of the hereafter. And Allah loves those who do good to others.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S.-Israel genocidal war against Gaza continues for the 123rd day, with the death toll approaching 27,500, mostly women and children. Hamas stresses that any ceasefire deal on Gaza should include ending the war, withdrawing all Israeli troops, and removing the blockade. And a British cargo ship has been reportedly targeted by a drone off Yemen's western coast in the Red Sea. Thanks for joining us. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip continue to grapple with death, destruction, and displacement as the Israeli genocide rages on. At least 113 civilians were killed in Israeli shelling during the past day. The central city of Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis, where most displaced civilians are sheltering, have been the focus of the attacks. The Al-Amal and Nasser hospitals in Khan Yunis are still under siege, with Israeli drones firing on residents there. The UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, says one of its food convoys has come under Israeli artillery fire. UNRWA was delivering aid to starving Palestinians in northern Gaza when it came under attack. The death toll from Israel's genocidal war stands at nearly 27,500. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says that Israel is obstructing a ceasefire agreement in Gaza. Senior Hamas official Osama Hamdan said that Israel wants to continue its onslaught on Gaza and to keep the territory under siege. He reiterated the movement's demands for a ceasefire. Hamdan said that it should be comprehensive and involve the full withdrawal of Israeli troops from the Strip, as well as the removal of the blockade on it. Hamas is currently reviewing a framework of a ceasefire deal that was offered to it after talks in Paris involving Israeli, American, Egyptian, and Qatari representatives. Israel is under pressure from the international community and even its own Western allies to stop the military offensive on Gaza, which has resulted in large-scale death and destruction. In the Explainer program, Mahdi Abbasian elaborates on the truce deal proposed to Palestinian fighters and provides details as to how it could work to stop the onslaught in the Gaza Strip.
Okay, it seems like there is another plan on the table of Hamas and Israel to look at the ways to stop the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. This comes after preliminary discussions between Israel, the U.S., Egypt, Qatar. Hamas has confirmed receiving the proposal, so what exactly does this plan entail? Now, it is noteworthy to point out that this plan was first hashed out by the intelligence chiefs from Israel, the U.S., and Egypt, as well as the Prime Minister of Qatar, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman bin Jassim Al Thani, in Paris. They called it the three-stage truce plan. So, what are the three phases that were hashed out that is supposed to lead to an end of this aggression that would satisfy the demands of both Hamas resistance group and the Israeli regime and its extreme cabinet? The first phase would consist of a pause in fighting and the release of elderly, civilian, and women and children captives. Major deliveries of food and medicine to Gaza would resume. The second phase would see the release of female Israeli regime forces and male recruit regime forces, another increase in aid deliveries, and the restoration of utility services to Gaza. Finally, the third phase would see the release of bodies of deceased Israeli regime forces in exchange for Palestinian prisoners freed. There are preconditions that need to be abided by during each of the phases. Military operations from both sides would have to stop during each phase, a complete stop, something unthinkable at this juncture in time. Another precondition depends on the negotiations when it comes to captive and prisoner releases. The specific number of Palestinian prisoners to be released at each stage will be determined with a focus on those who face long prison sentences. If all goes according to the plan, then the war will end and Hamas will ultimately release male Israeli soldiers in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails. Hamas demands for a ceasefire approval don't quite add up to the reported three-stage truce plan. Hamas has previously demanded a permanent ceasefire as a precondition to enter negotiations. It wants guarantees and a plan for rebuilding the enclave. The withdrawal of Israeli regime forces from Gaza is also a demand, with ending the blockade the final demand. But other key resistance officials have also some key demands that doesn't appear the Israeli regime can meet. This is what Ziad al-Nakhale, the Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, has said. A clear political solution that ensures the rights of Palestinians. Or how about Osama Hamdan, senior Hamas representative in Lebanon? He has said, in addition to the Hamas demands, that there needs to be an international recognition of Palestinians' right to self-determination, adding that there needs to be an establishment of an independent Palestinian state with Al-Quds as its capital. Something the Israeli PM and his cabinet have outright rejected. The far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir appeared to suggest that a deal with Hamas would trigger a cabinet collapse and an end to this unity cabinet. In this post on X, he said that a reckless deal would equal a cabinet split. This would mean the end of a unity cabinet. Meanwhile, the tally keeps increasing. Over 27,000 Palestinians murdered and over around 224 Israeli regime forces taken out, although this figure is grossly underreported by the regime. So, as with all truce agreements, this is no exception. It will be a difficult one to achieve, especially given that some of the demands from either side are enough to prevent a truce from happening.
Israeli forces have carried out a raid on an area near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Several houses were stormed in the town of Al Yamun. The regime troops also clashed with Palestinians during the raid. The Israeli military has intensified its raids across the West Bank since October the 7th. The incursions are part of a larger campaign to crack down on Palestinians in the occupied territories amid the regime's onslaught on Gaza. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed or abducted in the West Bank over the past 4 months. On Monday, Israeli forces shot a 14-year-old Palestinian boy in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Quds over an alleged stabbing attempt. Mona Kandila, correspondent in Ramallah, joined us earlier with details.
14-year-old Wadia Shadia Wissat from Jabal al-Mukabbir town inside Al-Quds arrived at the junction of Ba'ale Adumim near the settlement of Ba'ale Adumim and near the checkpoint of Ba'ale Adumim. The Israelis claimed that he had a knife and that he tried to stab one of the Israeli soldiers there at the Ba'ale Adumim junction near the Palestinian town of Al-Izariyye in Al-Quds. This Palestinian minor was shot and killed immediately, of course, as the images came from their show. A Palestinian minor had been shot and was laying on the ground with the Israeli forces, of course, preventing anyone to help him or even to bring any ambulances to transfer him to hospital. So that's why we are saying it's a murder. Every time the Israeli forces claim that a Palestinian tried to carry out an anti-Israeli operation, even before he carried out an Israeli operation, the response would be to use their guns to shoot and kill this Palestinian instead of arresting him, interrogating him, and if he is guilty, as they claim, would be detained. At the same time, we have to say that Palestinians continue to face different forms of aggression, and this is the Israeli policy. And even if the Palestinians, as the Palestinian human rights organizations and the powers are saying, Palestinians have the right to defend themselves, to defend their lands, and the Israelis' presence is illegal. Since the 7th of October, we are speaking about 382 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces and the settlers, the majority by the Israeli forces here in the occupied West Bank.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has conducted new operations against Israeli positions on the occupied Sheba farms. The regime forces have also expanded their air and artillery strikes on Lebanese towns. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh has the latest.
Well, Hezbollah has launched at least three different operations specifically today on the occupied Lebanese Sheba farms. We have two operations in Sumaqa, another operation in Waisat al-Alam, and these are the posts that are constantly actually targeted by Hezbollah. And it seems also that lately Hezbollah has been focusing its attention on the Lebanese occupied Sheba farms posts and the barracks, whether those that are in the hills of the Sheba farms, or behind that even with newly situated posts that the Israelis have just put forth as a result of the fact that they are continuously onto target by the resistance. The Israelis, of course, have continued to target Lebanese towns, whether through artillery or warplanes. We have artillery fire that reached Tair Harfa, Zabqin, Shebain, Sheba and Arkub, and Naqoura. We also have a lot of shelling from warplanes that have bombed also the towns of Naqoura, Barashit, and Shaheen. And here I want to mention that the town of Barashit, for example, is somewhere basically further off. It was one of the towns that is not adjacent to the border. And so the Israelis seem to be extending their operations. And so it does seem that if in case there is a wider confrontation, there is a possibility that it is not only Hezbollah that will be facing Israeli aggression or the Israeli possible invasion of South Lebanon. There will also be other factions, whether it is the Amal movement or the Fajr movement, and even perhaps Palestinian resistance factions like Hamas and Islamic Jihad that are working from inside Lebanon.
British cargo ship has come under attack off Yemen's western coast in the Red Sea. A British maritime security company says the vessel was targeted with a drone west of Yemen's Hodeidah province in the early hours of Tuesday. It added that the cargo ship sustained damages, but none of the crew members were harmed. No group or country has so far claimed responsibility. There's been an uptick in attacks on Israeli-owned or Israeli-bound ships in the Red Sea amid anger over the regime's bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. American and British vessels have also been targeted over the joint U.S.-UK aggression against Yemen. We've spoken to Christopher Halali, researcher and political analyst in the U.S. He says Washington and its allies are trying to maintain their hegemony in the region by attacking resistance groups.
Party and the Republican Party are the parties of war. They're the parties of the military-industrial complex. They're beholden to their shareholders who want to see more war and bloodshed abroad. And the U.S. taxpayers are funding that. And so, of course, to go to your question about Yemen, the Yemeni people have been under U.S.-supported genocidal war now for 9+ years. And, of course, that was led by the Saudis and the Emiratis, this coalition against the Yemeni resistance. Now, of course, Yemen has taken the profound and heroic step to stand on the side of justice, to stand on the side of dignity, and to stand for the Palestinian people in their time, in the face of this genocide by the Zionist regime. The United States, of course, and its allies cannot tolerate this. They cannot tolerate anyone going against their power in the region. And of course, they recognize that the Houthis, that the Yemeni resistance are very powerful. They have, you know, Ansar Allah has a tremendous capability, and so they feel threatened by them. They feel threatened by their, you know, taking over of ships, by their cutting off in the Bab al-Mandab Straits. They are very concerned about the power projection that the Yemeni resistance had, because it has affected the global economy.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq says that it has carried out fresh attacks against Israeli positions in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza. The resistance group said it carried out a drone attack against a target in the city of al-Rashrash, also known as Eilat, in southern occupied Palestine. This is not the first time that Iraq-based resistance groups have hit Eilat after Israel started its onslaught on Gaza on October 7th. They've also carried out a number of attacks against U.S. bases in the region. They say that Washington is behind the Israeli regime's onslaught on Gaza and is to blame for more than 100,000 civilian casualties so far. Iran's ambassador to the UN has strongly condemned U.S. strikes on Iraq and Syria, as well as its attacks on Yemen.
Iran strongly condemns the U.S. military attacks on Syria and Iraq territory. The U.S. military action is illegal and unjustified and blatantly violates the basic norms and principles of international law and the United Nations Charter, particularly paragraph 4 of Article 2 of the Charter. It is also a flagrant breach of Iraq and Syria territorial integrity, sovereignty, and political independence. Iran also strongly condemns the joint military action of the United States and the United Kingdom against Yemen, which constitute an obvious violation of the United Nations Charters and international law. Furthermore, they have openly abused security.
Amir Saeed Irvani made the comment while addressing a UN Security Council meeting on threats to international peace and security. He said such illegal measures target civilians and vital infrastructure and pose a great threat to peace and security of the region. He also rejected U.S. claims that resistance forces in the region act on behalf of Iran.
All of the resistance groups in the region are independent, and their decisions and actions are motivated by their legitimate rights under international law that are ending the illegal presence of U.S. in their territories, stopping the genocide in Gaza, and ending the occupation of Palestinian territories. Therefore, any attempt to attribute these actions to Iran or its armed forces is misleading, baseless, and unacceptable.
Iran's ambassador asserted that Iran has never sought to escalate tensions in the region and it has no military bases in Iraq. The envoy noted that Iran's military advisors are present in Syria on the official request of the country's government. Irvani added that the only way to stop conflicts in the region is to abide by international law. He said this means forcing Israel to end its genocide in Gaza and the occupation of Palestinian territories. as well as terminating the U.S. military presence both in Iraq and in Syria. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says elites in the Muslim world have a duty to push their governments to sever ties with Israel. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says that enemies are trying to prevent the elite from assuming their growing role in the society in this regard. The leader added the negligence of the elite would result in heavy blows to the nation. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks while meeting with Air Defense Force commanders. The meeting came ahead of the anniversary of a key event before the fruition of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. On February 8, 1979, and 3 days before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran's Air Force personnel met with the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in Tehran. And that does with this additional World News. Thanks for tuning in. It's goodbye for now.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of In the Name of Allah, the Best of the Names. In the Name of Allah, Lord of Earth and Heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. If you remember, we said that a review of Imam Khomeini's views, scientific works, and behavior indicate that a very effective and important source of his success was his sincerity. In other words, Imam Khomeini did all his deeds absolutely for God's satisfaction, and he never thought of what others would think or like. To be more clear, the great leader of the Islamic Revolution only tried to fulfill his obligations and avoid forbidden acts. He used to warn that being trapped by satanic temptations stems from the lack of sincerity. He used to call on the youth to have sincerity and do everything for God's sake. It is good to give an example to show his sincerity. Years before the Islamic Revolution, a book was written by Ahmad Hekamizadeh, which was an evident insult to Islam and Muslims. The book was titled Asrar-e Hazar Saleh, meaning 1,000 Year Secrets. The Imam wrote a book titled Kashful Asrar, meaning Exposure of Secrets, to show the true intention of the author and to negate the profane content of the book. But surprisingly, Imam Khomeini didn't let the publisher write his name on the book. Yet, this very act made the Imam famous among the ulema and the faithful. This is an obvious instance of the hadith which reads, "Whoever is for Allah, Allah will be for him." Another outstanding characteristic of Imam Khomeini was that he hated and even got angry with being praised. He used to say that God will reward our deeds if we have done them for him. So there is no need to seek people's praise and satisfaction. Many memoirs have been mentioned on his severe reaction against those who tried to extol him. Another merit of the Imam was that he followed his great ancestor, the Prophet of Islam, to greet people in advance. In other words, he used to be the first to greet whomever he encountered. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was also apologetic if he made a mistake. This modest characteristic made him great in the eyes of others. At times, he would even seek apology for what he was not guilty of. And in fact, it were some of the officials who had come short of their duties and caused problems for the government or the people. He was so modest that he had ordered the officials to refrain from mentioning his name much on TV and radio, and speak of the successes and honors of the nation and the Islamic Revolution instead. Another merit of Imam Khomeini was his sociability and good behavior with all walks of life. According to the Islamic teachings, a faithful should be smiling while facing others. This was very clear in the Imam's contact with others, except those who were the avowed enemies of Islam and the hypocrites. Imam Khomeini used to smile even at the most critical and toughest junctures of the eight-year war. The friends, pupils, and relatives of the Imam say that he had even a sense of humor in gatherings and his classes. This might look contradictory in a man who was so strict, resolute, and uncompromising against the enemies. But it is a characteristic of great men of history like Imam Ali, peace upon him. And Imam Khomeini was a true follower of Imam Ali. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, was very patient at tough conditions and pains. This was evident during several times of his surgeries. Another high virtue of the Imam was his control of anger. In other words, he was very forbearing and would never get angry for personal issues. The Imam was patient in the face of those who had disrespected him, but would be very harsh at those who insulted Islam or an Islamic value. Imam Khomeini was very brave and decisive and would not fear anyone or any power when defending Islam. He was also very wise, orderly, and disciplinary in handling different daily issues. This did not mean rigidity, but it meant that he deemed high importance to the time of his pupils and anyone who wanted to see and contact with him. He used to instruct young students of seminaries to stick to orderliness and discipline in their courses and activities. He would also emphasize the importance of respecting the teachers and great ulama who had left behind very precious books and trained great generations of seminary students.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad.
Tonight on Exposé, Zionist Israeli claims of Hamas headquarters under Al-Shifa Hospital debunked by the same broadcast media that tried promoting said claims. Social media posts claiming Hamas mass-raped Israeli entity settlers on October 7 proved to be deceptive stories, as all claims so far lack evidence. Perpetuating the big lie, as Joseph Goebbels calls it, with numbers, AI-generated fake photos, and hundreds of voices on TikTok, for one, that globally unmask Zionist manipulation and lies right at the ICJ. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Exposé. Publishing unsubstantiated claims, telling only one side of the story, and painting Palestinians as human-looking animals are all unprofessional mistakes Western media makes while covering the genocide of Zionist Israel against the Palestinian people. With so much to cover since October 7th's Al-Aqsa flood, let us dive with our expert guests into the world of broadcast, digital, and social media, uncovering in each step Western media lies and propaganda in favor of Zionist Israel, beginning with fake TV news. Having raided Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital, on November 15, the Israeli occupation forces seem to lack evidence supporting their claims against Al-Shifa Hospital. Throughout the ongoing war, Zionist Israel justified their attacks on the hospitals, especially Al-Shifa, with the claim they were command centers for the Palestinian resistance, Hamas. With me today to expose the lies of the Israeli occupation forces is Mr. Fuad Itayim, expert in TV broadcast media. Welcome with us on Exposé, Fuad. It's a pleasure
Thank you for having me.
With us now. If we talk about the Al-Shifa and how the mainstream media was basically stuck on talking about the raid of at the Shifa Hospital and how it is basically a command center for the Hamas Palestinian resistance, a lot was being said, especially on TV news reports. What can you tell us about that?
Definitely. The BBC, which is one of the biggest mainstream Western media outlets, which has been extremely biased in its coverage of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, on one of its shows, BBC Verify, it's analyzing footage that the Israelis released of Al-Shifa Hospital, and the BBC, on its show Verify, concludes that Israel is either lacking evidence that the hospital serves as a command center for Hamas, or it's not sharing any of the evidence.
Israel described the Al-Shifa Hospital as the main headquarters for Hamas's terrorist activity. This IDF animation, posted in late October, claims to represent the Hamas tunnel system underneath the hospital. But having been inside Al-Shifa since early Wednesday, Israel's yet to produce evidence of the tunnels. It has allowed the BBC and Fox News to film at the hospital, though only locations of Israel's choice.
This is what they found.
Israel also released its own 7-minute video, which BBC Verify has analyzed. A watch visible in that video suggests it was filmed a few hours before the BBC arrived. And this IDF video was posted, then deleted, then reposted, this time without a section referring to an Israeli soldier who'd been held hostage.
I don't know when this was used the last time.
Also in the video, we see a room with an MRI machine.
And if you zoom in and we get some light over here, what you will be able to see is military equipment.
The BBC was shown the same room. And what we see in the two videos doesn't precisely match. For example, there's one gun in the IDF video, two by the time of the BBC footage. Israel has told BBC Verify this is because more weaponry and terrorist assets were discovered throughout the day.
And as always, an AK-47.
Israel also says its video is a single shot with no edits. But this appears to be an edit. We don't know the reasons for that edit, nor how significant it is. The IDF, though, says suggestions it's manipulating the media are incorrect. The IDF video also shows military equipment in other locations, though we can't verify how it came to be there. And what we see in this IDF video doesn't equate to Israel's description of Al-Shifa as an operational command center for Hamas. The US is using a different phrase, saying Al-Shifa was used as a command and control node. That implies a much smaller facility. Israel is adamant this hospital was a command center, but for now, at least, it's either not found supporting evidence or it's not sharing it.
Well, it seems laughable. It has not been a genocide. It does seem laughable how they are working with basically just gadgets around them to create this faux appearance that it is a headquarters for the resistance. What do you think about that?
It's definitely a genocide. They're targeting hospitals to make Gaza uninhabitable for Palestinians. This video specifically is extremely problematic, so much that even the BBC has to verify it. And we know that the BBC has always been very biased in favor of Israel. Mm-hmm. It's another classic case of Israel's ridiculous theatrics that it thinks it can fool the entire world with. As we saw in the video, the weapons we saw stashed next to the MRI machines, there's no way to verify how they got there, first mm-hmm. of all. Second of all, when the BBC showed up to film, they weren't the same weapons that were there, as we mm-hmm. saw. We have no idea what this CGI blueprint of tunnel networks under the hospital is or what it's based on. If you find the whole video, actually, this is the same video that where the Israeli soldier shows a bunch of discs and he shows you a Hamas laptop mm-hmm. and he says the laptop is filled with incriminating evidence. Again, there's no way to verify any of it. They did this with other hospitals as well. If you remember the Al-Rantisi hospital, they mm-hmm. found a calendar of weekdays, which they laughably said was a list of Hamas fighters, and this drew ridicule across the entire world.
Though it was just a schedule, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday yeah. schedule. Yeah. I remember that distinctly. But it does truly resonate as to what kind of charade the Israeli occupation forces use, which prompted a mainstream media like the BBC to say, hold on, wait a second, no, this did not happen.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Fuad Itaim, for being with us to talk about this
TV report.
Thank you for being with us. Now we move on to the digital mainstream media, ladies and gentlemen. Claims of systematic rape on October 7 appealed to a racist trope of the savage, predatory Arab, which is why Western politicians and media are so unconcerned by the lack of evidence. To share with us such revolting claims is Ms. Julia Qasim, expert in digital media. Thank you very much for being with us, Julia. If you can tell us more about what the Western mainstream media, how it's refusing to investigate October 7, on what happened on October 7 and whatnot, especially when it has to do with digital media.
There have been no shortage of testimonies that have come out of the mouths of the settlers themselves and the Zionist officers themselves, which have proven and told stories about the tanks from the Zionist from the firing from the Zionist tanks and from the Apache helicopters killing their own settlers on October 7th. Mm-hmm. However, these stories have been actively suppressed by the Western media, including Yasmin Porat's October testimony, one of the settlers who had witnessed October 7th. Her interview was removed off of social media mm-hmm. After getting a lot of coverage and a lot of spread it. after it spread around. So one story that's gained momentum recently is the Hamas mass rape, which we heard about a lot on social media.
And then it
kind of got picked up and rehashed again and again on mainstream media, which are allegations coming out against the Zionist settlers and the detainees that we've seen for ourselves, what kind of treatment they've gotten from Hamas. Mm-hmm. But of course, it all started with this by MSNBC's reporter Raf Sanchez, claiming that Netanyahu had a phone call with U.S. President Biden and spoke of mass rape on October 7th.
Well, Katie, I just want to update you on a little bit of breaking news. You watched in the last hour as President Biden emerged from that very, very long phone call with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. The president visibly enraged as he described the atrocities committed in this country. Just in the last couple of minutes, we've got the readout from the Israeli side of that phone call, and it gives a little bit of an insight into why the president felt so strongly. The Israeli Prime Minister told President Biden that what happened on Saturday was barbarism that has not been seen since the Holocaust. He talked about hundreds of people were slaughtered. And Katie, for the first time, an Israeli official saying on the record that women were raped as part of this attack. It's been very widely reported, but this is the first time officially it's being said by an Israeli official. He talks about Israeli soldiers being...
Wow. And from there, from that report, Julia, it went on like fire, eating up digital media, especially a lot of newspapers and very well-known websites talking about these claims that there was a mass rape and that Netanyahu himself was talking to Biden and telling him about it. Those are strong allegations.
They are strong allegations, but it's funny how they came to be resurfaced in Western media months after they weren't reported on in those same outlets and in those same sources, which we'll talk about in a little bit before. And of course, they go in these allegations without any evidence, just to reinforce a certain connotation on what Palestinians do, what Arab men are like, in order to justify this genocide that's happening against Gaza. Mm-hmm. So moving on from here, we had renowned Western press like the New York Times printing pieces like how Hamas weaponized sexual violence on October 7th as late as December 28th, claiming that the mass rape story was verified based on just one line that says, Israeli police officials said that they believed Ms. Abdush was raped.
I think we have an updated zoom on this article. If you can see the second one where there's that's what you're talking about, basically, where the Israeli police officials said that they believed that Mr. Abdush was raped, and she has become a symbol of horrors visited upon Israeli women and girls. Wow, they believe.
They said that they believed.
So we should believe what they believe?
What Israeli police believe. The same Israeli police that spread the 40 beheaded babies.
That's beyond what basically journalism is. I mean, the 101 classes of journalism has been shattered with these believe and unverified documents. But do you think that that's like talking like, we're talking about the New York Times here. I think that is a big deal, Julia. If the New York Times is ready to lie without having any evidence, don't you think?
It's not the first time the New York Times lied without any evidence. And unfortunately, mainstream media is doing this constantly because right now the objective is to kind of support Israel at all costs. Mm-hmm. And the ends justify the means to Western governments and Western press that they can give full range for the Zionist entity to... you know, say whatever it is to basically continue the military, the joint military and political objectives of the U.S. and Israel.
And New York Times was not alone in it, was it?
It wasn't. So another piece here by CNN published on January 4th says that one witness claims Hamas fighters laughed as they raped and murdered a woman in Israel on October 7th.
It's important that the world hear from witnesses. While you were hiding out that day, hiding from Hamas, you saw five of these terrorists, pulling a young woman out of a van. Tell us what you saw next.
I hide in the bush, and 30 meters from the bush, I saw a white van that arrived near the bush. And from the van, five civilians is from Gaza. Normal civilians is not soldiers from Nukba's soldiers. It was regular people from Gaza with normal clothes, and they started to pull her clothes off. It was like a half a circle, and the girl was in the middle of the circle, and after they pulled the clothes off of the girl, they started to one of them started to rape her, and it was something like a 30 seconds.
Wow. You hear how, first of all, he said he believes civilians and not Hamas fighters were the ones that committed the act. Of course, it looks obviously like he's just trying to pull a story that's not there. So there's no evidence that, even from his account, if you're to take it at face value, that Hamas ever did that. And we don't even know who these supposed civilians were that committed this, in case the story ever had a shred of truth to it. Mm-hmm. So inside the article, after presenting this entire story without evidence, CNN writes that CNN cannot independently verify Cohen's account. So Cohen, the guy who was giving this interview, mm-hmm. the guy who was being interviewed, he actually gave a interview to I-24, the Zionist entity news website, just days after this, where none of this was mentioned.
Wow.
By the way, so it's obvious it's just.
So he's changing the story as well.
He's changing the story. He's bringing up new information without evidence, and there's some sources that also shown that he's an IDF soldier too. Mm-hmm. So
it's even different than the introduction that was given by the CNN reporter or the CNN anchor. And then he says that it wasn't Hamas, it was regular civilians. And then later on a different TV channel, he says that none of this actually happened. There was another third story that he was telling. So that tells you a lot about horrible lies that are being spread, especially on digital media. I mean, if you go to the website of CNN, I'm pretty sure that this kind of story is a story that is promoted, that is being put on the first page for the people to see, and that's a bit scary.
Exactly.
Isn't it? I want to thank you very much, Ms. Julia Qasim, for being with us. And I wonder just what kind of horrible lies the social media segment now has for us. Off to social media, ladies and gents. Israeli entity officials and supporters have been putting out false and contradictory statements in an effort to deny responsibility for an airstrike that killed hundreds of Palestinians in the Al Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City on Tuesday, October 17. But the attempts at spin have quickly come apart. Here with us is Sima Itayim, social media expert, to reveal how the Zionists admitted to being behind the massacre, then quickly changing the story. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for
Sima,
me.
How did it all start?
Well, let's have this first tweet as an example. Ali Abu Nima of the Electronic Intifada pointed out that the Israeli government account on Twitter, now called X, posted and then quickly deleted a video that it said supported the occupation army's claim that the hospital had actually been hit by a misfired Palestinian rocket.
Mm-hmm.
The timestamp actually exposed a half-hour time gap. It was half an hour after the bomb exploded at the hospital.
Wow.
And so the occupation forces quickly edited out the video and kept the tweet. But the internet is forever, and we have those receipts now.
Oh.
Can't hide.
And there you go. We have that screenshot showing us that the timestamp there is just different from what happened, or the time that the airstrike happened, and they blatantly just deleted it, and we're supposed to just X-Men, just, you know?
Right.
That camera that deletes our memory,
right.
That's not here in real life. Well, let's go to the second tweet.
Yeah, so this, in its edited current version, the tweet still tries to make that same claim and blame a misfired rocket launched by the Islamic Jihad, which is the second biggest resistance group in the Gaza Strip.
Mm-hmm.
But the video has been removed. People were quick to notice.
Mm-hmm. So they also removed another video that they supposedly were claiming that the Islamic Jihad did that bombing, and then that video also was fake.
Correct.
Wow. Now the third tweet.
Right, that same account actually later posted footage from an Al Jazeera broadcast claiming that it showed the moment that the Islamic Jihad launched a rocket which misfired and hit the hospital, killing hundreds.
So do you have that video? Can
let's watch that video.
Wow,
together.
Let's see that video.
بلغ عن إصابات في صفوف الإسرائيليين ونحن نشير إلى أن هذه المدينة هي الأكثر تعرضا للصواريخ منذ بداية هذه الحرب. عمدة المدينة كانت تحدث قبل.
This video was supposedly shot by Al Jazeera, but it was not from the area, but they claimed it was from the area?
Correct. So, it was the same account putting out another video. Maybe the other attempt had failed. I don't know. But people were once again quick to notice and point out that the rocket being launched was too far away from the site
from
of the
Al-Ahli
strike.
From the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital.
And that's aside from the fact that the blast couldn't have physically caused, been caused by Palestinian weapons. They can't inflict that kind of damage. And we know that. There's another thing. There's also another time gap of 50 minutes.
Wow.
So that was another thing that...
Between the timing of the video and the actual airstrike on Al-Ahli.
Right. Wow. So that was too much of a gap between the two incidents, and people were once again questioning, you know, why are you still lying?
But questioning now is anti-Semitic, Seema. Be careful.
That's true. We have to be careful.
And then we have maybe another tweet.
Yeah, we have another tweet by a Zionist Israeli media personality with 1.5 million followers on Facebook and 500,000 on Twitter. Hananiah Naftali, he's actually the army spokesman.
Wow.
Not just an influencer or personality. And he reported minutes after the strike on Al-Ahli Hospital that the Israeli Air Force did indeed hit what he called a Hamas terrorist base inside a hospital in Gaza. And he went on to claim that Hamas had been launching rockets from hospitals, mosques, and schools and was using civilians as human shields. All Hasbara talking points that have repeatedly been debunked over the past 3 months.
But then yet again, that tweet disappeared.
It did disappear, but it stayed on his Telegram channel. He quickly deleted it off of
Twitter.
So
he deleted it on ex-Twitter, but he kept it
on Telegram.
And then later on, he said that the Israeli occupation forces, they don't bomb any hospitals.
Right.
No. We didn't see other hospitals like Al-Shifa Hospital or Al-Sur Hospital or other hospitals all across the Gaza Strip being hit. And it's just ridiculously unprofessional media to report about this, ridiculously unprofessional by those spokesperson that you just showed us, Mr. Naftali himself, who has at least millions of followers, whether on Twitter or on other social media. And they still claim to be the most moral army in the world, Seema.
Right.
That's... They beyond do. Horrific. I want to thank you very much, Seema, for your time and effort
You're
to
welcome.
Show us the tweets and the social media fabrications. Now, ladies and gents, please stay tuned because next we will be talking about figures expose. Now, over half of young Americans surveyed on Zionist Israel's war on Gaza believe the Zionist state should cease to exist and instead be replaced by a Palestinian entity, according to an online poll conducted in December 2023. The monthly Harvard CAPS Harris poll found continuing support for Zionist Israel in its campaign against Hamas among every age demographic but 18 to 24 years old. Overall, the survey found that 81% of respondents do actually back Zionist Israel. However, among the youngest age bracket, though they support, is evenly split between Zionist Israel and the Palestinians. On several questions, voters in that age group seem to express contradicting or, let's say, muddled views. For instance, despite 51% replying in the affirmative when asked if Zionist Israel should be ended and given to Hamas and the Palestinians, we saw that 58% of respondents in the group also thought Hamas should be removed from running Gaza. However, most of the entire pool of respondents, that 60%, preferred a two-state solution to the ongoing conflict. At the same time, we saw that 60% think that the October 7 attacks were justified by Palestinian grievances. Although 63% of all respondents answered that Zionist Israel was trying to defend itself with its military offensive aimed at supposedly eliminating Hamas from Gaza, 60% of 18 to 24-year-olds said that the Zionist Israeli campaign constitutes genocide against the people of Gaza. Very interesting figures indeed. Now, let us end off with the most notable voices from TikTok during and after South Africa dragged Zionist Israel to the International Court of Justice. For Exposé Voices, the loudest last week was that of Adila Hassim, a prominent South African lawyer who recently captured international attention with her compelling representation of South Africa at the International Court of Justice, ICJ. During the opening arguments, Adila emphasized the severity of the Israeli entity's brutal onslaught on Gaza, describing it as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in modern warfare history. Here's Adila's voice.
For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea. They are also at immediate risk of death by starvation, dehydration and disease as a result of the ongoing siege by Israel, the destruction of Palestinian towns, the insufficient aid being allowed through to the Palestinian population, and the impossibility of distributing this limited aid while bombs fall. This conduct renders essentials to life unobtainable. Genocides are never declared in advance. But this court has the benefit of the past 13 weeks of evidence that shows incontrovertibly a pattern of conduct and related intention that justifies a plausible claim of genocidal act.
Ladies and gents, we conclude now the first episode.